Hello and welcome to The Bunnycast, the podcast dedicated to all things Bunny McGarry, the Dublin Trilogy and beyond. This is episode 12, I'm Queen MacDonald, and as always, come on in, you're very welcome. This week, I want to talk to you about opening scenes. I bloody love opening scenes. Done right, they can be incredible and really set up a film, TV show or book for success. I know for me, if you grab my attention in the first few minutes, I will hang on in there for the bitter end just to find out where the story is going and in the hope of seeing something equally as good as the opening was. Some memorable opening scenes that spring to mind in no particular order are Happy Valleys. If you don't know this show, it's a gritty British crime drama set about 40 miles or so away from Manchester in West Yorkshire. It follows a female police officer with a difficult family life and a challenging job. I think it's on Netflix right now and I do highly recommend it if you've not checked it out already. One of the very best scenes in it is the very first one, where we meet our lead character as she's handling a drug addict who has covered himself in petrol and is threatening to set himself on fire. Boom, instant drama, and she introduces herself to us while trying to talk him down. It is some of the best TV writing you will ever see. Similarly, Bond films are frankly rather variable in their quality, but Casino Royale, the first one with Daniel Craig in the starring role, where he kicked off the new, darker, more realistic Bond era, has a fantastic opening scene. To be honest, I have sat through the next three films waiting in vain for them to produce any scene that is nearly as good. If you remember it, that's the scene where Bond confronts a British official who has been selling secrets. As he is talking, he flashes back to a fight where he killed a man for the first time. The baddie starts to tell him the second time will be easier, when Bond shoots him right between the eyes before he can even finish the sentence. That's a great opening. It shocks the audience. This is not the Bond you saw on TV growing up. He is not messing about. What made me think about opening scenes is I'm currently reading a book called The Border, written by the incredible Don Winslow, and without giving any spoilers away, it too has an amazing opening scene. To be fair, he's an absolutely incredible writer. And honestly, I'm not sure there is anyone alive right now writing crime fiction who can touch him. His work seems extremely well researched to the point where it feels like it might actually be non-fiction, and yet at the same time, it is incredibly visceral. He puts you right there like nobody else can. Again, I do highly recommend it. Not that I'd be daft enough to compare my work to any of the three brilliant examples listed, but I do give opening scenes a lot of thought. I think my favourite one of my own work is the one you're about to hear, which is the opening scene of Angels in the Moonlight. As the book is a prequel, I went in knowing I'd have to introduce Bunny to readers who potentially hadn't met him before. And for those that had, I wanted to introduce Gringo, his partner and best friend. And I needed for us to instantly get and enjoy the dynamic between the two of them. As well as all that, I wanted something dramatic to be happening. I distinctly remember having the idea of Bunny and Gringo dealing with somebody jumping off a building, but it took me ages to find the rest of it. It frankly didn't work for Bunny to be cracking jokes and acting casual with someone who was genuinely in distress for lots of obvious reasons. Without giving too much away, the breakthrough finally came when I asked myself the question, why would somebody be standing on the edge of a building if they're not actually intending to jump? So, to give you the answer to that, without further ado, here is the splendiferous Morgan C. Jones reading Chapter 1 of Angels in the Moonlight. Enjoy.
Chapter 1. Rory Coyne's pulse thundered in his ears. He wasn't great with heights, and when you're standing on the 6-inch wide ledge of a building 5 stories up, that's a bit of a problem. He tried not to look down, but he didn't have many other options. Looking to the left or right gave him a view of the Dublin skyline, but from an angle that only emphasised that he was now a part of that skyline. He had tried closing his eyes, but his treacherous imagination insisted on showing him the ground rushing up to meet him again and again. He was regretting the 4 pints he'd sunk before getting up here. 4 was either too many or too few. It was certainly not the right amount. He was sober enough to be terrified, and drunk enough to want to cry. A pigeon landed on the balustrade beside him and cooed. He tried to focus all of his attention on it. The pigeon looked at Rory, and then pointedly down at the ground. Feck off! His sweaty hands clung even tighter to the balustrade as the autumn winds tugged at his bomber jacket. The wind was worse than the view. He steadied himself, then quickly pulled his left hand away to wipe it on his jumper. The movement was met with a gasp from the crowd below. A sickeningly giddy shock of excitement passed through him before his hand found its hold on the white stone again. He'd been up here for about 25 minutes now. For the first 10, nobody had seen him. When standing on a ledge 5 stories up, the options for getting someone's attention are very limited. Well, bar the one very obvious and dramatic option. Eventually, some Spanish students had noticed him. A large group of them had gathered, looking up, chattering excitedly for several minutes, while the natives tutted and weaved around them. A crowd of foreign students blocking the flow of pedestrian traffic on Grafton Street wasn't exactly an unprecedented occurrence. Then a girl who worked in HMV had poked her head out of an upstairs window to have a cheeky fag, and she'd made eye contact. Her scream had really got things moving. There was now a ring of uniformed Gardaí trying to close off the street below, which had immediately drawn a crowd. Rory's situation combined 2 things Dubliners loved: drama and a free show. A busker had set himself up at the edge of proceedings and was belting out a less than sympathetic rendition of Orr Kelly's "I Believe I Can Fly." Rory glanced down again. In the middle of the cordoned off area stood a tall, thin man with a distinctive shock of brown hair. He was standing looking up at him, hands in the pockets of his cashmere coat.
"Is that you, gringo?" shouted Rory.
"That's Detective Sergeant Spain to you, Coyne."
"Ah, crap."
It wasn't that he minded gringo so much. As coppers went, he wasn't the worst. No. It was more what came with him.
"How are you, Rory? How's it hanging?"
He was no longer alone on the roof. The Cheshire Cat grin of Detective Bunny McGarry appeared in Rory's peripheral vision, about 12 feet away, leaning casually over the balustrade, as if expecting a neighbourly chat about the football. McGarry was a big lummox of a man, with a thick Cork accent and a scruffy second-hand look about him. He was early 30s, 6'2" and fat, but in a usable way. He carried the kind of bulk that could slam through a door or be thrown behind a punch as required. His left eye was lazy, which gave people the impression he was slightly unhinged. That impression was frequently backed up by his behaviour.
"I knew it."
Rory nodded down towards the ground.
"Yous two are like stink and shite. Never one without the other."
"Poetic as always, Rory," said Bunny. "So how's life?"
"Stay back, Bunny. I mean it."
"Cool your jets, Rory boy. I've no intention of coming anywhere near ye. I'm just worried about you, that's all."
"Yeah, right you are."
"You've got great sentimental value to me, Rory. Sure, weren't you one of my first callers as a newly minted guard, just graduated from Temple Moor?"
"You put me through a wall."
"Be fair, that wall collapsed while I was apprehending you. If memory serves, I'd interrupted yourself and Jack O'Regan while you were relieving Des Kelly carpets of some lino. How is Jacko, by the way?"
Rory didn't answer. Regan had been halfway over the wall when Bunny had grabbed a leg. Jacko still blamed that incident for his subsequent lack of offspring. To be fair, the wife had left him when he'd gone back to prison, which hadn't helped. In one fluid movement, Bunny was sitting on top of the balustrade, his legs dangling over the side. That was the other thing. McGarry moved with more grace and speed than expected. Something in your mind just couldn't accept that a big, hairy-arsed, red-faced ape of a man could move with such dexterity. It was like seeing a baby elephant riding a tricycle.
I said stay back.
Calm down, would you? You want to jump? Jump. I'm not stopping you. But I've been on me feet all day. It's 4 o'clock and I've still not had me sandwiches.
To emphasise his point, Bunny pulled a tinfoil-covered parcel out of the pocket of his anorak and started unwrapping it.
The car is in the garage again, so I'm trying to save a bit of money by bringing me own lunch in.
I don't want to talk to you.
It's nippy up here, isn't it?
Continued Bunny, well used to people not wanting to talk to him.
I suppose there's no buildings to block the wind and that.
Where's Sergeant Cartwright?
Our designated negotiator is at her sister's wedding. Would you like to leave a message?
I want to speak to someone else.
All right, all right. Jesus, you're awful jumpy, Rory.
No pun intended.
Bunny pulled a walkie-talkie from his other pocket and held it to his mouth.
This is Major Tom to ground control. Over.
Rory saw Gringo holding a walkie-talkie up to his lips down below.
Roger, Major Tom. How's it going up there?
Well, to be honest, Gringo, not great. Mr. Coyne seems highly agitated, and he'd like to speak to someone else.
Bunny pulled the walkie-talkie away from his mouth and addressed Rory.
Would you prefer to speak to Sergeant Spain instead?
Anybody but you.
Hurtful, Rory. Hurtful. You might make me suicidal, and then I'd totally steal your thunder.
Bunny lifted the radio back to his lips.
Sarge, he says he'd much rather talk to you. Are you still a big girl's blouse who's afraid of heights?
Afraid so.
Bunny put the walkie-talkie down beside him and concentrated on opening his sandwiches.
It's a no, I'm afraid. Don't take it personally. Gringo is generally fierce sociable. For a dub, I mean.
You need to start taking me seriously.
I really don't. In fact, if you take a header off this roof, I get a week's holidays due to emotional distress. I'm thinking of the Maldives, or maybe Greece. Do you know if they do that plate-smashing thing at the end of every meal? I've always fancied a go at that.
You're a heartless bastard, Bunny. I'm in emotional distress, and you're over there making jokes.
Would you like a sandwich?
No.
Are you sure? They're jam and cheese.
Yes, I'm... Hang on. What kind of a fucking lunatic eats jam and cheese?
We're on the doorstep of a new century, Rory. Open your mind to new experiences. I had my first cocktail last week. Didn't care for it, mind you, but still.
I don't give a shite about your manky sandwiches or your gay drinks, all right?
Tut, 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 Rory. There is no cause for lazy homophobia like that. We've been on a course.
Bunny put the walkie-talkie to his mouth and spoke while chewing.
Sergeant Spain, I feel obliged to inform you that Mr. Coyne has used homophobic language while conversing with me in the course of executing my duties.
That is very disappointing to hear, Detective McGarry. Please pass on my discomfiture at the close-minded attitude his choice of language conveys.
Absolutely.
Bunny pulled the walkie-talkie away from his mouth.
Gringo says stop being a prick.
Why don't you go shag your bum chum then and leave me alone?
Bunny had a mouthful of sandwich and didn't immediately respond. Rory watched him chew exaggeratedly before swallowing.
I'll have you know, Sergeant Spain is an unhappily married man, at least for a few more weeks, and I, well, I've not met the right girl yet. Your Ashling is a bit of a looker, come to think of it.
You leave my wife out of this.
Widow. You mean widow. Well, soon to be anyway. She doesn't strike me as the type to stay lonely for long. Is she what you'd call high maintenance?
Rory didn't answer. A wave of nausea was building and he could taste bile at the back of his throat. Bunny's walkie-talkie beeped.
Have you asked him yet?
If you want to ask him, why don't you come up here, Gringo?
Because, Detective, I am down here coordinating crowd control efforts to ensure Rory's death plunge doesn't take out any punters, or, God forbid, a busker.
Jesus, said Bunny. Do you think we'd get in trouble for moving one of those mimes under his flight path? I really hate those creepy bastards.
While I sympathise, Bunny, our role doesn't extend to criticism of the arts.
More's to pity.
Rory regained the power of speech.
Would you two stop bleating on like a couple of old ones? It's really annoying.
All right, said Bunny. Take it easy, Rory. By the way, is it the end of the Millennium Psychosis Blues that have you all suicidal?
What are you on about?
Gringo wants me to ask. He's become a tad obsessed with this, to be honest with you. He saw a thing on one of those digital channels about how the end of 1999 could be the end of days. And now it's all he talks about. Millennium bugs, Y2K and all that. Planes are going to fall from the sky, he says. Cults will be having mass suicides, he says.
Bunny looked up from his sandwiches as a thought struck him.
You're not trying to get in before the rush, are you?
Shut up.
Because it's only October now. Are you not a fan of Christmas or something?
I'm in emotional turmoil, and this is how you handle it.
Bunny shrugged.
Well, I've not had the training. They cancelled it for the homophobia seminar. The Minister for Justice gets overheard cracking a shitty joke at some banquet, and all of a sudden we're all on a course. Personally, I've always got on fantastically with the gays. Statistically, very law-abiding bunch of lads and lasses.
Beep. The walkie-talkie crackled into life.
What did he say about the thing?
Sorry, Gringo. He says it's nothing to do with the Millennium. He's in emotional turmoil, apparently.
Ah, shame.
Bunny pulled the walkie-talkie away from his mouth.
Wasn't it only a couple of months ago that you were trying to jump off the roof of McDonald's up the road there, Rory? You'd think the good merchants of Grafton Street would have learned to lock the doors to their roofs by now.
They can't, said Rory. They're fire escapes. Health and safety, so they're not.
Rory stopped talking. The 4 pints of courage he'd downed were making their presence felt, both on his bladder and his queasy tummy. A spasm passed through his esophagus, and he retched reflexively.
You okay, Rory?
Before he could respond, his mouth opened and recycled stout spewed forth.
Christ on a camel, said Bunny. Look out below.
Rory's physical outburst coincided with a gust of wind blowing north up Grafton Street, which was very unfortunate for one side of the crowd of spectators below.
Ah, for fuck. Ya manky.
Rory wiped his mouth and glanced over to see that Bunny was on his feet and edging towards him.
Stay back.
Bunny held his hands up and slowly backed away to his previous position.
Relax, Rory, relax. You feeling okay?
What do you care? You're useless at this.
All right, said Bunny. How's about you come in off there and I'll even help you fill out the complaint form? Enough of this silliness now, don't you think?
Beep.
Bunny.
Sorry, Gringo. Rory was feeling a bit unwell.
Well, it's fair to say that he has somewhat lost the sympathy of his audience.
A voice rose from the crowd of onlookers.
You'd better jump, you prick!
Hey, shouted Bunny. Less of that. Can't you see this poor Aegis is in emotional turmoil?
He turned to Rory.
Sorry about that, Rory. Some people have no sense of decorum.
You'd know,
responded Rory, drawing in deep breaths.
Why are you here anyway? Since when is Grafton Street you and Gringo's patch?
It's not. We were up here pursuing a report from one of the shops of a gentleman attempting to be intimate with a mannequin.
Jesus, is that Andy Dooge again?
I would imagine so.
The perv.
Don't be so judgmental. He suffers from agalomatophilia. It's a proper thing.
Is that...
with a mannequin? Yes. His shrink gave him a note that he carries around that explains it. Poor little pervert.
Just then, a gust of wind whipped at Rory's coat, and with a yelp, he redoubled his grip on the stonework.
You're looking very pale, Rory.
Shouldn't you be trying to talk me down or something?
Probably. When you tried to jump off the roof of McDonald's, what did Sergeant Cartwright say to you?
She was good, Cartwright. At least she gave a shit.
Ah, she's a nice girl, to be fair to her. I asked her out there a few months ago. Turned me down very gently. My advice would be, remember what she said to you then and sort of replay it in your mind.
Thanks a bunch.
Beep, beep.
Excuse me, Rory. Yes, Gringo?
The roundup is complete, amigo.
Thank Christ, I'm freezing my knackers off up here.
Bunny shoved the walkie-talkie in his pocket and swung himself around so that he was facing Rory, with one leg now on either side of the balustrade.
So, what's the story, Rory? To use an American phrase, it's shit or get off the pot time. Are you taking the quick way down or coming down the stairs with me?
Go screw yourself, Bunny.
I believe last time, despite Sergeant Cartwright's fine work, it was your Ashling showing up to plead with you that got you to see sense, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm afraid she's not coming this time.
How do you know?
Because her and... hang on,
said Bunny, pressing the button on the walkie-talkie and holding it up.
Who was with Ashling, Sarge?
Bunny held the walkie-talkie out towards Rory.
Her two sisters, her ma, her niece Carol, and three nephews. I didn't get their names.
Rory suddenly felt a whole lot more queasy.
To be fair, said Bunny, it was a good idea. I assume it was Ashling's. You're not smart enough for this. A man is threatening to jump off a building. So of course the staff and the security guards in the shops are going to be gawping out of the windows. Human nature, isn't it? Same as people slowing down to look at a car crash. So while you're out here, pretending you're about to Wile E. Coyote yourself, your beloved and her extended family are availing themselves of the five-fingered discount in Brown Thomas's. It's a good scam. Trying the same trick twice, though. Greedy. Every guard in Dublin had been briefed in case you tried it again.
Ah, for... I told her that, but she wouldn't listen.
Well, the woman has expensive tastes, said Bunny. Let's get down out of the cold, then, shall we?
Rory sighed.
Fair enough.
Bunny hopped down onto the roof and disappeared from view. Rory stood there, looking down at his feet. After a few seconds, Bunny's head reappeared.
Problem? I'm feeling a bit funny. I've been standing here for a while, and I...
Rory looked down, and suddenly the view began to swim. One image of the crowd juxtaposed messily on top of another. He closed his eyes and felt his head dipping forward. Screams. His eyes opened. There was a moment of giddy weightlessness as the ground swirled beneath him, and then a hand grabbed the back of his jacket. He was dragged back slightly, but the coat slipped off him, his limp arms offering no resistance, and his body dipped forward again. Another hand grabbed his belt. Then Rory's head cleared. His bladder emptied, and he grabbed at the arms around him.
All right, I got you, said Bunny.
Rory tried to turn, pulling his way back towards the shore. Panic gripped his every nerve.
Calm the fick down!
One of his feet slipped off the ledge, jerking them both downwards. Rory redoubled his efforts, grabbing at everything, anything, wrapping them in a messy embrace. Live, live, live! The words blared like a siren in his head.
Stop fighting me, you gobshite!
Screams from below. Bunny McGarry's straining face rushed towards Rory, and then... Impact. Darkness. Nothing.
Thanks for listening to the Bunnycast. If you'd like to hear more, then please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, as that way we know you want them to continue. The audiobooks of all the Dublin Trilogy are available from Audible, iTunes, and anywhere else audiobooks are sold. This podcast is written and presented by me, Queeve McDonald, with the stories being read by Morgan C. Jones. The audiobook production is by Sound Entertaining Limited. Podcast production is by Richard Massera, with the artwork done by Wonderwife. Copyright everything bar the music, McFory Inc. 2018. And speaking of the music, the killer track you're hearing right now is from Honour Among Thieves, a new band that is a merger of the Bible Code Sundays and Brand New Zeros. Do check them out. Take the world on.